angry mob is not going to make our feelings go away.
Die quickly. That's right. The Republicans want you to die quickly if you get sick.
You know, do me a favor. Could you say senator instead of ma'am?
Yes.
It's just a thing. I worked so hard to get that title. So I'd appreciate it. Yes, thank you.
And guess what this liberal will be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, will be about basically taking over and the government running all of your companies.
Tell you things are bad.
Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust.
And now, Grassroots Radio with Don and Jim.
Welcome to Grassroots Radio with Don and Jim. This is our Memorial Day special. I'm Jim Tomasik. Don's not here. Don is celebrating it with his wife, who's a master chief in the Navy. They're spending the Memorial Day at the house with the kids and doing that sort of stuff, and I'm going to take the show today. And this is kind of a big deal to me. We're going to dedicate this to a friend of mine's father. His name was Captain William Simmons. He's of the Air Force, and he served in Vietnam. And the more I read about him, the more fascinated I became with him as a person, and I can see a whole lot of him in his daughter, Lynn. He was the kind of person who, and he was an intelligent person, and he had a lot of character, and I think it comes out, and it's evident in his daughter. Also, at one point during the show today, Mark Herr, a buddy of mine here with Mid-South Tea Party, just like Lynn, had an opportunity to talk to Armin Simmons. That would be Captain William Simmons' brother. They were both captains in Vietnam at the same time. Armin was a helicopter pilot, and he talks a little bit in this phone call, which I haven't even heard all the phone call. I just heard a little bit of it. But he talks a little bit about it, his relationship with his brother and what it was like losing his brother. And he seemed, by the end of the call, at one point, to be emotionally moved by what we were trying to do with this show. And what we're trying to do is point out that there was 1 million men who served in the armed forces in Vietnam. A whole lot of those guys didn't come home. Some of those guys were pretty astounding individuals, and it appears to me that Captain William Simmons was one of those guys. And that's why we're dedicating this show to him. And I'm sure glad to get to know Lynn Moss, because if I hadn't known her, I wouldn't know anything about him. And now we're going to use this as an opportunity to tell other people about him as well. Memorial Day has become something of a, well, it's almost not what it's supposed to be. It seems to have become an opportunity for us to go to buy a new car or something that's on sale. There's some sort of a Memorial Day blowout sale or something. Or maybe we look at it as an opportunity to have a day off from work, eat some barbecue, drink some beer, and chill out. Get some work done around the house or something. That's not what it's for. It's for taking the time to remember men and women who paid the ultimate sacrifice for us to live in this free nation. I'd like to thank Don James for his service, my buddy here on the show. I guess it kind of, when I really started paying attention to, you know, somebody says, well, I was in the Navy, you know, you kind of take that for just what it's worth there. But I overheard him talking one time to a guy about, he was over there in the Persian Gulf when the USS Stark was hit. And he was on one of the rescue ships, one of the first ships to get over there to the Stark. And he said that they were on their way over. They see the Stark, you know, it's listing to one side. The flag is hoisted up. It's still up there, still standing, still waving, and there's smoke billowing in all around it. And then he looks off past that, and he sees two more American ships coming from the other side. And that was his star-spangled moment. You know, he had a whole lot of pride in his country, and, you know, patriotism was welling up in him. I think that made me pay a little bit more attention to him and where he has been. But I think there's a lot of unsung heroes out there, and we should be looking for one, and we should be thanking them, thanking their family for what they've done, and go out of the way. Maybe nobody has ever thanked them. There's probably a whole lot of those kind of guys who came back from Vietnam that were never thanked. In fact, there's probably a lot of them that were just flat out abused by the people when they got back here. And I think now there's enough of us, like with Patriot Guard riders and this, that, and the other. We're not going to let that happen anymore. But anyhow, here's another song I want to play. It's by Toby Keith, and it kind of brings out some patriotism in a person. And so anyway, I'll be right back. We're going to listen to a little bit of that phone call, and then I want to talk to you about my nephew. Well, that was Toby Keith, and he was singing Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. He's talking about sticking a boot in somebody's ass who needed it. Before I get into the phone call with Captain Armin Simmons, talking about his brother and all that, I'd be remiss if I didn't say something about my nephew, my sister's son. Right after 9/11, he was moved to join the Marines. He was a young man. In fact, before he joined the Marines, he was a scrawny little boy, and I just never thought of him being anything but a little boy. You know, I've known him since he was knee-high to a grasshopper, as they say. But right after 9/11, I think that changed a whole lot of us. I know it changed me profoundly. Well, it also drew up a lot of patriotism in a lot of people, and a lot of very patriotic people wanted to reach out and touch somebody who touched us and touch him in the same way. Tony, I think he goes by Anthony now, but I've always called him Tony. His name's Tony DeLuca. He joined the military. He joined the Marine Corps. And he did several tours. He went through Camp Lejeune. He specifically wanted to go through Camp Lejeune because that's where his grandfather, my father, went. And both of my brothers went through that training in boot camp. Then he ended up doing one or two tours in Iraq. And at one point he had to come home because something natural had happened with his foot, something with ligaments or something, and he had to come home because he had to have surgery on his foot. He had to do something about it. Well, he was just itching to get back over there, and so he put in to get back over there the very first opportunity he could. He went back to Iraq. When that tour was over, I believe he came back home. The next thing I know, he's going to Afghanistan. His mother was really worried. Laura DeLuca, that's his mom, my sister, and she was extremely worried about him. He told her, well, you know, where they have me, I'm doing some stuff that's kind of like behind the scenes. The whole Afghanistan had to blow up for them to, you know, get to where I was in harm's way. But it's basically, he was lying to his mama. It all come back to get him one day. The truth came out when he and two other Marines were driving a truck and they hit one of those IEDs. He was being medevaced to Germany. I can't remember the name of the base over there. But he became conscious. He was very badly wounded. He was hitting the head with shrapnel or whatever, and his knee was all messed up. His leg was all messed up. They told him, you are the worst injured. And, you know, they just did that. And that's what he needed to know, that he was the worst off. Well, the fact was, the other two were dead. The other two Marines, they weren't being medevaced away. They were going home the bad way. I think it was a long time before he ever found out that was the actual case. But anyway, I really do appreciate my nephew and his patriotism, his standing up, going back to the fight, standing tall and being a proud Marine and representing our family. So to Tony and your mom, thank you very much, as Elvis would say. All right, well, now we're going to listen to this phone call that Mark Herr had with Captain Armin Simmons, the brother of Captain William Simmons, who was lost in Vietnam. Captain William Simmons is also the father of a friend of mine, Lynn Moss. Anyway, let's see what this has. I haven't even listened to all this. I listened to a very little bit of it, so it'll be new to me, too.
And in fact, my wife had just come over there from Puerto Rico to stay a couple of weeks before I came home.
Yeah.
And we got a knock at the door, and the chaplain came, and I figured what it was. I'd say, sure enough, it was. Anyway, I flew out to Travis and escorted him home. And, let's see. Oh, we had plans, you know. We were going to meet, and we had already planned to meet in Germany after Vietnam.
He mentioned that in one of the letters.
Yeah, well,
basically, just want to talk about your brother in a positive sense and his sacrifice. You also served in the military. According to the letters, that you were a helicopter pilot.
Yeah, I flew the dust off two different tours in Vietnam. Have you ever heard of Dust Off?
No. What is that?
It was quite an operation. We picked up the injured and got notation for that, I guess.
So you guys had to enter into combat zones where folks had been injured and pick them up and take them back to the hospital.
That's what we did. I know. Well, you know, William used to love to fly, even at the base here in Florida where he was.
MacDill?
Oh, MacDill, yeah. Mm-hmm. They used to let him fly quite a bit. He could land that thing, take off, and he used to talk about getting that thing at full. This is the F-4C Phantom. Get it at full blast, 20,000 feet, and then turn it straight up and go until it wouldn't go anymore.
Wow.
And so he just lets it fall any way it wants to go. He said that's the height of leaves are there.
From the letters, it seemed like he really loved to fly.
He really did. He was a doctor by trade and a pilot by heart, I think.
He was using the flight surgeon excuse. I need to be with the pilots while they're flying.
Yeah. See, we'd had that problem too. My commander got killed, and he had a flight surgeon on board that wasn't supposed to be on there.
Mm.
But we'd slip them in every once in a while because they love to fly too, and they watched after us too, and we should appreciate that. And I'm sure the Williams guys felt the same way over there. He's the only flight surgeon that slept with them and everything else, you know.
Yeah, he mentioned that when he got there, they had his room all ready to go and everything.
Yeah, they went off and left him first, and he raised hell, and finally was able to get over there a few weeks later.
Now, were you the older? Are you the older brother or younger?
No, I'm 2 years younger than he is.
Okay, yeah. Were you? How many brothers and sisters?
We had a total of 10. I was the last one, about 3 years old. And
are you kidding me?
We had five boys and four girls. Yeah.
Wow.
All the boys served the military.
Lynn Moss, she's very, very proud of her daddy and you too.
She's a doll.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't believe you had that many brothers and sisters. What was going
on? Yeah, that's a big family.
Yeah, you had a basketball team and a soccer team and everything you needed.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you, preacher, two of them were doctors, and one's a geologist, and I'm an army brat.
Parents, did they live in Alabama? Where did you find?
Mississippi, Meridian, Mississippi.
Meridian, Mississippi. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You said Army brat, so your dad was Army.
Not brat. I'm sorry. Army retired. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Army.
No, my dad wasn't in the Army.
Your dad was not in the Army.
Yeah, he was always a patriotic sort of person, and of course, I hate to see all the kids leave to go off. You know, one was in World War II for 4 years, and he made it back okay.
You know, here we are today. It seems like that attitude or that spirit of service is kind of missing from the newest generations. Your brother and your other siblings seem to have that spirit of service and willing to make the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, I think so too. But I don't know. You know, in the 60s, when I was over there, a lot of that in 64 and 69, and the 60s here in this country, it was the beginning, that type of attitude, and the 60s really became bad, the peaceniks and everything else, and the anti-war and all this kind of stuff. But I had those same young guys, 19, 20, 21 years, flying in the back of my aircraft, and they were awesome. Man, I wouldn't trade any. So it depends on where you were and what you were doing at the time. I wouldn't trade those guys for anything in the world. And some of them got killed. But and to think and to read about what was happening back home, it was something else when I had a gold mine over there with me as far as I was concerned. But you're right, now it's even got worse. And well, I don't want to get political, but I think if we had a Reagan in office, it might help.
Yeah. Good conservative Reagan. Yeah, no kidding.
That's right.
Could you share like a memory you had with your brother growing up that was pretty cool? You know, something he did off the wall, skinny dipping or something, jumping on a train. And you probably have tons of those.
Oh, I know. Yeah, there were tons. Yeah, well, our house was a small neighborhood and on the outskirts of Meridian. And we had a big house and big steps in the front, and all games were played right there at our house. All the neighbors came there, and we would play prisoners breakaway, and people go hide all over that neighborhood. I'm talking about for blocks. And we had a park, a Highland Park, which is really a beautiful place then and now, bordering on one side. I was in an insane asylum on the other side, beautiful groves and everything like that. So we grew up in the park and in those groves and this sort of thing, and always hunting up in there. Just, I tell you, when we get together, it's quite some memories flowing. As far as he and I, well, we used to ride horseback on these little ponies south of the airport in Meridian, and we'd go, like you mentioned, the skinny dipping. We had a big mud pond there, and we'd ride the horse a while and get in that mud pond, and there's also a little river that ran down there, and we'd ride the horses across there. And then when the planes would come approaching real slow over the approach to a field, we would sit out there and moon them and everything naked, you know.
Well, none of them crashed, right?
Yeah.
When did you and he decide to become pilots? I mean, how did that come about? You had to go through a lot of training for that. And well, I mean, what yeah. inspired you?
Well, when I was in high school, I joined the National Guard, and I also went in the service to get the GI Bill. And that's what William did, too, went in to get the GI Bill. We all did, and came back out, and I was assigned to a helicopter unit there in my hometown, the same key field I was talking about in Meridian. And I graduated Mississippi State and went to flight school. And I went in, I volunteered for stay in 2 years with the idea of getting out. But I loved it so much, I said, man, this is what I want to do, so I stayed in.
Yeah.
In fact, when I was at Fort Bragg, William was at a hospital at Fort Bragg interning, and yeah, just before I was hitting the flight school.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it. And he just decided he liked it and stayed in.
He had to do both flight school and residency training for his doctor.
No, he didn't have to go to flight. He didn't have to learn how to fly. In fact, he don't have to fly. But
he just learned by...
He just flew because the guys let him fly, and he got pretty good at it. Well, I would have loved to fly on one of those Phantoms.
The F-4, man, those things were loud.
Yeah, goodness.
Well, I appreciate you sharing this little bit of insight with me in some small way or incorporated in that audio documentary. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure would. I think it's great for you guys to do this. It's awesome.
Hey, do you have anything special you want to say to the veterans, to the different service members out there on Memorial Day?
Well, I heard someone say that, you know, we put the stickers on our cars and we maybe send something to the troop and then we forget about them, but we need to keep those guys in mind every day, and we need to keep in mind who their commander-in-chief is. But I feel so much for those guys in Afghanistan and Iraq right now, because it appears to be a stalemate that we need to take some different type of action to bring it to a close. I don't have an answer to it, but I really feel for those guys. They're roughing it. I guess the main thing, they need our prayers.
Armand, thank you for answering the phone.
Well, I'm sorry I couldn't be of much help to you. But
I appreciate your service. I'm 41 now, and I've always heard the cliche of giving the ultimate sacrifice for one's country or for one's family. And so I have to be honest, I cannot empathize with you and your loss of your brother from the Vietnam era. Being in the Tea Party movement and seeing where the direction of the country is headed, I cannot empathize with the loss, but I can empathize with the concept of the need for somebody has to sacrifice something in order to preserve liberty and freedom.
Boy, now that's well said. And you guys, you're the salvation of the bad times that we're experiencing right now. And what you talked about, the people who don't think the same about serving their country. Thank God for the Tea Party. There is an effort to restore more allegiance to our Constitution and what it stands for, our obligation to protect this country. I praise you people to the hilt for doing that.
Well, the admiration and the thanks goes both ways, Armand. Thank you for your service. And I don't know how to say it in words concerning the loss of your brother, but we thought here in the Mid-South Tea Party that some sort of fitting tribute to honor his sacrifice and your service and give some honor to the Simmons household for their sacrifice, at least on behalf of my liberty and freedom, I'm very thankful on this Memorial Day.
Wow. Well, I sure do appreciate that. Wow. You're getting to me.
Good kill. I've got Special, Cameron Bay, South Vietnam, a Mississippi captain who is a flight surgeon and chief of the flight medicine section, 12th USAF Hospital here, said that his boys almost fight each other to get on the flying schedule. Captain William P. Simmons, 32 of Meridian, Mississippi, has the duty of keeping the F-4C Phantom jet pilots of the 12th Tactical Fighter Wing healthy.
Morale has been excellent, and the stresses and strains of combat flying that could show up have not been apparent among the men of the 12.
Make no mistake about it. We are going to win.
You know, we are putting in a major effort in Vietnam. As you know, we have about 10 or 11.
Because we are the greatest peacekeeping nation in the world today because of our power.
Good job. I saw you splatter one right in the back with a rocket.
Rod's got lucky again.
Dr. Simmons was called to active duty with the National Guard during the Korean conflict for 1 year. After service, he finished his education and received his MD degree from the University of Mississippi School of Medicine and interned at Walmack Army Hospital, Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He then moved to Arcola with his family in 1962 and was engaged in general practice for 2 years. He entered the U.S. Air Force in 1964 and attended the School of Aerospace Medicine at Brooks Air Force Base, Texas. Upon graduation, he became a flight surgeon and was assigned to the 557th Tactical Fighter Squadron at MacDill Air Force Base, Florida. He received his tropical survival training in the Panama Canal Zone and trained further in Norway. When the 557th was sent to Cameron Bay, South Vietnam in October 1965, Captain Simmons was left behind. He volunteered for an assignment with the wing and, through the determined efforts of the wing officials, followed his pilot friends on to Cameron Bay. Before his death on September 3rd, Dr. Simmons had been diagnosing ills for the pilots of the 12th for more than a year. It was his conviction that his flying gave him a better understanding of the pilots and their problems. He said,
"By taking part in the pilot's daily life, you attain a mutual trust between doctor and patient, akin to the old family doctor. We are almost like personal physicians to the men. I live in the same barracks with the pilots, and this gives me a closeness which enables me to spot problems and tensions long before the man ever steps into my office."
Dr. Simmons was asked what was the biggest problem faced by the pilots.
"Combat flying has its dangers, and I know ground fire, but no one is going to cut and run because of it. As a matter of fact, the biggest problem is when they can't fly. These guys are happiest when they're flying and very unhappy when they're not."
Dr. Simmons, who flew 43 combat missions, including 29 in the 1,600-mile-per-hour Phantom, says his flying gives him a greater understanding of the pilot and his problems.
"I also call out the airspeed, altitude, and angle of attack to the aircraft commander, who must concentrate on the target and his weapons while we are attacking."
Perhaps some passages from the letter dated June 6th of this year from Captain Simmons to his younger brother, Captain Armin Simmons, who was then a helicopter pilot for the 42nd Field Hospital, will give us a clearer insight as to the flight surgeon's feelings. The letter reads in part,
"Dear Armand, I got your letter yesterday, and yes, I did get the first one too. I've been lazy about writing. I just finished my first 6 months over here, and I guess you might say I'm over the hump. But I still have a hell of a time to go. The town hasn't been bad at all, except for the separation from my family, which is really bad. I try to keep busy and keep my mind off going home. Of course, that's hard to do."
The letter goes on to describe the situation there at the time, and then the captain wrote,
"Sounds like the Army is about to put the screws on you. I don't regret the year here, but I never want to see Vietnam again. And I'm sure you feel the same way. I'm all for the Air America plan. That isn't bad living, especially when you can bring your family to Bangkok. I don't think Marilyn could survive another separation. She took it really well for the first 5 months. But now she's beginning to weaken, and I can understand that. By the way, congratulations on the Vietnam Cross of Gallantry. I'll do my best to pick you up several of them and the stars, too."
In a passage from another letter, Bill insists on flying.
"Most of the flying is in the F-4. I had to stand down from flying strike missions for 2 months because 2nd Air Division surgeons sent out a letter telling us not to fly. After 2 months of frustration, I finally talked our wing commander into letting the flight surgeons fly anyway. So we're back in the saddle again. Marilyn doesn't know I'm flying again, so don't mention it in the letters to home. No point in her worrying about it. I guess I'm just a fighter jock at heart. I've gotten spoiled on flying and get miserable when I can't fly. I only fly one or two missions a week. I have only 38 strike missions right now, but over 100 total combat missions. Most of our missions are against supply areas, trucks, and roads. We occasionally get a close air support mission, which is most interesting. I'm not flying north of the 17th parallel, so don't get a crack at a MiG. I have pre-carded for Germany and will probably get it. If I don't, I'll probably go ahead and start a residency in one of the clinical specialties. Maryland is hinting for me to get out, mainly because of the possibility of future separation. But I can never go back into general practice again. I think she'll see it my way once I get home. Both my boys will be playing baseball this summer. Bill in Little League, if he makes the team, and Bob in Shirt League. I sure wish I could be there. They are little dolls. I miss my little gals, too. Poor wives have to suffer sometimes. You really learn to appreciate them when you are away. If we go to Germany, I may not see you for some time, unless you can swing a town in that direction. I wish you could. About time to close shop. Write again soon. Tell Lydia hello for me. Love, William.
According to Hobson's Vietnam Air Losses, Captain Clifford S. Heathcote and William P. Simmons were making an instrument approach to landing at Cameron Bay in F-4C trail number 640771 when the aircraft disappeared from the controller's radar scopes. The aircraft had crashed into a mountaintop south of the airbase, killing both crewmen. Captain Heathcote of Union, New Jersey, was assigned to the 557th Tactical Fighter Squadron, while Captain Simmons' official assignment was to the 12th United States Air Force Hospital, 12th Tactical Fighter Wing. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. The following passages from other letters tell something of the wishes and desires of Dr. Simmons. The first is from Major Bob Foster, Comron, September 12, 1966, shortly after he was reported missing in action.
Dear Marilyn, I would have written sooner, but I've waited and hoped and prayed. At first I was optimistic, but now things just don't look very good at all. We've searched and we've given Doc every opportunity to make contact with us, but there's been nothing. We know the wreckage is within 15 miles of the base. However, the area is covered with jungle that's 150 feet thick, and it will take time to locate it. I know how tragic this loss is. Doc and I became so close here that I also feel as if I've lost a part of myself. Every man in the squadron feels the same, and I want to express the deepest sympathy from each of us. Doc thoroughly enjoyed his work here and distinguished himself almost to the point of becoming a legend in his time. Knowing and associating with him was one of the most pleasant experiences of my life. He was a devoted husband and father and was anxiously awaiting the time when he would get all of you together again and to take all of you to Europe. You will certainly be kept abreast of any new developments until then. May God bless you and yours. Sincerely, Foster.
The second letter was written on September 17th to Mrs. Simmons by Captain Marvin M. Gredert, an F-4C aircraft commander with the 557th Tactical Fighter Squadron. It reads,
Dear Marilyn, I received your letter 2 days ago, and since I have searched extensively, I am convinced that Bill had the two letters in question on his person. We found the tape you sent, but not the letters. Dave Cotchard said that he had lunch with Bill that day. Dave said he remembered he and Bill stopping by the post office, and as nearly as he can remember, Bill did have some mail. I would rest assured that Bill did get your letters, Marilyn. Yes, Marilyn, I'm convinced. I saw their airplane after we came out of the first cloud. What happened after that, I'm unable to say. Marilyn, Bill was and is, I pray, still the finest flight surgeon I've ever met, but better still, a person of great loyalty, honesty, and guts. He was accepted not only as a flight surgeon, but also as a damned nervy guy who had to be where the action was. You asked me how long he had been flying combat missions. He had been flying again with us for about 6 weeks, as I recall. Bill touched all of our lives and made them a little better. I'm convinced that he's the main reason I'm back on flying status. He was always ready with a smile and a joke, a sorely needed commodity over here. Please accept both Donna's and my sympathy and prayers. Sincerely, Marv.
Now, 1 month and a day since Captain Simmons was reported missing in action. His body, accompanied by the Color Guard, will have been gently borne by members of the Air Force to its final resting place. The 21-gun salute will have echoed into the stillness, and the bugler will have blown taps for Dr. William Prestwood Simmons, flight surgeon and captain of the U.S. Air Force, mission accomplished. We bow our heads and lift our hearts and thank our Heavenly Father for having let this man walk among us for 33 years. He did what he must do.